For patients with metastatic breast cancer testing positive for HER2, there's encouraging news about using an antibody drug conjugate, or ADC, as first-line therapy. I'm Sarah Maxwell, and welcome to this edition of the Audio Journal of Oncology. At the 2025 annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology in Chicago, early findings were reported from the DESTINY-Breast09 study. The study used the ADC trastuzumab deruxtecan, otherwise known as T-DXd, that delivers the topoisomerase 1 inhibitor deruxtecan to HER2-expressing cancer cells. Study leader Sarah Tulaney from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, USA.
We know that about 15 to 20% of breast cancers are HER2 positive, and currently the second line standard of care is to utilize trastuzumab deruxtecan or T-DXd, which has really demonstrated an unprecedented progression-free survival for patients with metastatic HER2 positive disease, where we've seen a 29-month PFS in a second line setting. And our current first-line standard of care is a taxane plus trastuzumab and pertuzumab, which has yielded a PFS of a little under 19 months. So there's been a lot of interest in trying to move T-DXd into that upfront setting, knowing that it seems like it would potentially be a better treatment option. We also know that about a third of patients who start first-line treatment for HER2-positive disease can't move on to get a second line of therapy, either due to death or deterioration in health. So moving our most effective treatments up front has been a big area of interest.
The question Dr. Tulaney's team investigated was, could the ADC alone or in combination with an anti-HER2 agent do better than standard of care? In the early results reported at ASCO, the DESTINY-Breast09 study looked primarily at progression-free survival.
DESTINY-Breast09 took patients who had previously untreated metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer and randomized them to one of three arms to get T-DXd plus placebo or T-DXd plus pertuzumab or to get a taxane with trastuzumab and pertuzumab.
And the DESTINY-Breast09 early results were reported in a late-breaking abstract at the 2025 ASCO conference.
The data that we're presenting here at ASCO is the interim analysis where there is a stringent criteria set for success that was met for the T-DXd and pertuzumab comparison to THP, but was not met for the comparison of T-DXd alone to THP. And so what we found was that for the combination of T-DXd and pertuzumab, there was a significant improvement in progression-free survival when compared to THP, with an improvement in PFS going from 26.9 months to 40.7 months, with a hazard ratio of 0.56, so a 13.8-month difference between the two arms. And so, in essence, it suggests that T-DXd and pertuzumab is almost doubling progression-free survival in this upfront setting. And I think because of that, could represent a potential new first-line standard of care option for patients with metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer.
Sarah Tulaney, chief of the Division of Breast Oncology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, also associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School in Boston, USA. At the ASCO annual meeting in Chicago, our reporter Peter Goodwin asked Rebecca Dent, Deputy Chief Executive Officer of the National Cancer Centre in Singapore, to comment on the DESTINY findings.
The big thing in HER2-positive breast cancer has been, as you know, a compound trastuzumab deruxtecan, or what we call T-DXd. And so far, the series of studies, the DESTINY studies, have really shown us a paradigm shift in our ability to target HER2. And so bottom line is, you know, we know from the studies that have been done previously that this is a very active compound where we were measuring progression-free survival, you know, even in heavily pretreated patients in the years. Not only that, but it's a drug that penetrates the CNS, and we have very few compounds that have such impressive activity in the brain. So like we always do, we try things in later line, and then we move them up to the frontline setting. And so this study was really, it's been well over 10 years since we've seen, you know, such a dramatic improvement in outcomes in the first-line setting. So the Cleopatra regimen, which is combining trastuzumab and pertuzumab and taxanes in the first-line setting have become the standard. And so this study was designed to say, can we improve upon that? Okay, so THP was the standard arm. Okay, so combining dual targeted therapy with taxane versus T-DXd plus pertuzumab, with the idea that, you know, you also want to prevent dimerization. So you're combining T-DXd with pertuzumab, and then the third arm of just T-DXd. Now, this particular study, we just saw presented the control arm with T-DXd plus pertuzumab. We're still awaiting the data, a little bit more stringent statistical sort of plan for the T-DXd only, so that will come. And this is the progression-free survival output, which is the primary endpoint of the study, which is about 14 months improvement in progression-free survival. So, you know, for us, you know, progression-free survival of such a large number is really quite impressive. And what's really important in this study, I think, is that it included patients, so 30% of patients that had PIK3CA mutations, which, as we know, is such an important marker of resistance. The criticisms of the trial, I would say, are that, you know, very few patients got crossover, so we know that T-DXd now is actually approved in the second-line setting. I work in Singapore. I work in Asia. Half the patients are from Asia, and a lot of them don't have access necessarily. And so one of the criticisms of the trial is, could you give these compounds sequentially? Do you need to give T-DXd up front for all? I would argue for patients that have brain mets, have a short disease-free interval, have very aggressive disease where you have one chance to give it, you now have that opportunity to give it. The trouble is we don't have a way of figuring out who needs to get it up front and who could get it sequenced. And we also know that half the patients in this trial were ER positive and HER2 positive. And the Patina data that we had spoken about before clearly shows, again, another equally impressive PFS benefit. So many people say, I'd rather give THB followed by endocrine plus CDK, and we don't know the best strategy.
So what, in practical terms, will this mean for your patients?
So for our patients, it means that, as I said, if I have a patient that presents with, you know, in their first line setting with CNS metastases, that will be my go-to, T-DXd plus pertuzumab, if I can get it approved and get it funded. If someone has had a short disease-free interval from their adjuvant therapy, or if they have, you know, very aggressive disease where I have one chance to control the disease, so I'm worried they won't get a second line. I think we are all kind of puzzled what to do, because we have many patients that get THP, go on maintenance HP for years, and we don't really want to give T-DXd for so long. So there's an ongoing single-arm phase 2 study looking at induction, so maybe 6 cycles of T-DXd, and then could you put the patients on maintenance? So I think we're where we were with adjuvant therapy 10 years ago. So, you know, right now, like, this is the best, but does everybody need it? And so the hope is that now we'll tease out, you know, these are the patients that could get T-DXd and maybe pertuzumab and then go on to maintenance therapy. These are the patients that maybe don't need it up front, that we could wait, but we haven't got there yet. We need to do those studies.
And T-DXd does have certain toxicities that need to be minimized or avoided.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think we have gotten better. I mean, like all therapies, what's so interesting, we first start giving it, we don't know how to manage it. So nausea used to be an issue, but that's not an issue anymore, I would say. We know what medicines to give. We know what to expect. Fatigue is something that, you know, if you're on it a long time, again, the whole concept of induction might be important, because being on it for years is but challenging. The ILD, I think we do know how. I think it's actually the tricky bit is you have to do more frequent scans, right? So I think we're getting better at picking it up earlier, knowing how to manage that, but having to do such frequent scans. So I always say, again, we're in this situation now where if we could get markers of toxicity, figure out who would have problems with it, that would be an important development.
And when you do get interstitial lung disease, what are the options then?
So the majority, right, is grade one, you know, case, you know, early stage. So you give them steroids, you give them prednisone, you stop the drug, you recheck. And if it, you know, Hope Rugo showed us at this meeting that you can rechallenge. But there are a few patients where you don't get a lot of warning and it does happen quickly. Thankfully, that's quite rare now. And I think the key thing is we do have to do the scans. So that's where I think a lot of us are struggling. As I said, if you've got a patient who's got aggressive disease, brain mets, and I've had those patients, you're willing to do those scans. You're willing to look for ILD. And I think where we struggle is, as I said, it's not for everybody. And how do we tease out? Because, you know, you don't want to have to repeat those scans. You don't want to have to worry about that. Because some of these patients live for years and years and years.
And you've got an improvement in disease-free survival. Will there be an impact on overall survival?
Well, so right, the data is immature right now. We haven't seen it. And so we'll just have to wait to see the PFS2 and overall survival data. But, you know, you have to, one of the things about the study is that, you know, there wasn't as much crossover as we might have seen in a different context. And so people will sort of take that into account where you weren't getting all the therapies potentially that you could for HER2-directed disease. And so the question is, it's sort of like combination versus single-agent chemo. We know you don't need to give a doublet. You can give one after the other, and the patients live just as long. So the question is, can you identify the sick patients that you need to give it up front and the other patients that you can wait? So for me, it is an option, and it's very exciting, but it's not for everybody.
Are there other ADCs?
There are a lot of ADCs. I do think that this compound is special, though. I have to be honest with you. I haven't been involved in some of the clinical trials that are, you know, looking at this compound in metastatic or early HER2-positive disease. I've done more research into HER2-low. But in the HER2-positive space, especially, this is, it's like nothing we've ever seen before. There are a number of other ADCs, but there's a secret recipe in this compound that, you know, it's unique. The CNS activity is unprecedented.
What are your recommendations then for patients with advanced breast cancer, HER2 positive?
So if it's approved in first line and they have brain metastases, absolutely, that would be my go-to drug. If they've been on adjuvant therapy and they've had HP, you know, in the adjuvant setting and they've relapsed within a year or two, those are the patients I'm going to go to. If the patient has, you know, extensive burden of disease where I'm worried I need to get control of disease quickly, those are the sort of, I would say, and Angie, that's one of the things that Claudine Isaacs presented today, which I think are very important. I think I would say we have more research to know the broader group of patients where we should use it up front, and we'll wait for longer-term follow-up.
Rebecca Dent, Senior Consultant Medical Oncologist and Deputy Chief Executive Officer at Singapore's National Cancer Centre and Scientific Chair of the 2024 meeting of the European Society for Medical Oncology, talking there with Peter Goodwin. The new findings from DESTINY-Breast09 seem now to be adding to a growing toolbox of ADC treatments available for patients with breast cancer. To comment on the landscape for using ADCs, including T-DXd, Peter called in to see Giuseppe Curiano from the European Institute of Oncology and the University of Milan in Italy.
There is a revolution ongoing, specifically with a drug that is an antibody drug conjugated. And this drug did a revolution in the treatment of HER2-positive disease. First, because impacted really in unprecedented way on the treatment landscape of HER2-positive disease. Just to tell you, the median PFS in the second line with T-DM1 was 7 months, with trastuzumab deruxtecan is 28.8 months, with an overall survival benefit. Secondly, because now we don't have no more HER2-positive and HER2-negative disease, but we have a spectrum of activity of trastuzumab deruxtecan across the level of expression of HER2. We have a trial that is the DESTINY-4 that demonstrated an important impact of TDX in the so-called HER2-low population, 1+, 2+, with ISH non-amplified, improving median PFS and overall survival. And finally, we had the DESTINY-6 for HER2-low and HER2 ultra-low population, in which, again, there is an improvement of median PFS and overall survival.
But you talk about progress of anti-HER2 ADCs in breast cancer. What is the progress, in fact?
The progress is that this drug impacted much more on median PFS and overall survival, and is currently approved in Europe for the treatment of HER2-positive disease and HER2-low disease, 1+, 2+, with FISH non-amplified. These account for almost 85% of the patient population with metastatic breast cancer.
Could you give me a summary of what sort of other ADCs are on the way that might take this even further or supplement or treat different categories of patients?
Yes, the second categories of ADC on the way are the anti-TROP2 We have two very promising. One is datopotamab deruxtecan that is actually under investigation for both HR positive and HR negative population. In the HR positive population, we had the data of TROPION-Breast01 that were positive for median progression-free survival. In the triple negative, we have first-line studies combining datopotamab plus immune checkpoint inhibitors like durvalumab or pembrolizumab. Another anti-TROP2 that is already currently available for later line treatment is sacituzumab govitecan, approved for triple negative disease and HR positive disease.
There is one point I meant to include, and that is to ask you about the so-called bystander effect, because we have been hearing that this is one of the secrets of success of ADCs. What do you have to say about that?
You know, these ADCs, have a cleavable linker. It means once they are endocyted in a cancer cell, the linker is cleaved, and so the drug is released. And it means we'll kill not only the cell where the drug was delivered, but also the cell that are bystander to that specific one. So you have the capability with this new type of agents to have an activity not only on the cells that express the antigens, but also on the other ones.
So finally, what should clinicians be able to tell their patients about the use of this category of agent?
They are very active agents. You have to learn how to manage toxicity, because we have several types of toxicity. But these are the only agents after 12 years that can improve survival in metastatic breast cancer.
Professor Giuseppe Cugliano, Director of the Early Drug Development for Innovative Therapies Division of the European Institute of Oncology and the University of Milan in Italy, who, by the way, will be President of the European Society for Medical Oncology for 2027 to 2028. And that's all for now. You can hear more from the Audio Journal of Oncology very soon, wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, from me, Sarah Maxwell, and the rest of the team, goodbye.